retired.
Good morning, everyone. How are we doing?
Good.
Hey.
My energy is low.
Right, lots. Everybody's buzzing and excited. That's good stuff, right? So I'm Lydia. Everyone knows that. So I think we're going to go around and kind of do a quick little go around. So obviously, I think we all know who each other are, but let's say who we are, and then we're going to talk about something interesting or something that's going on in our world.
Yeah.
So I could start that by handing out these that are hot off the press. I don't have too many to share, but this is a resource guide that we've been able to produce focused on North County, but includes resources from all over the place. So if you want to take one or two of those, and then if you want to go around and share a little bit about what might be going on in your world, that would be great. Michael, would you want to start down that way?
Sure. So I'm Michael Torres, Clark County Program Manager for Community Action, Housing, and Development. And in my world, we've really been focusing a lot on the biannual budget submissions that are coming up for the county and what the asks are going to be for the Department of Community Services. As applies to the CAB, basically that is to sustain the funding levels in the Human Services Fund. But that's going up next month. Okay, thank you.
Oh, and hi, I'm Bridget, and I have no idea what's going on. Not very much.
That's okay.
I'm just kidding.
My brain's not awake.
That's okay.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Hello, good morning. I'm Rebecca. I work with Clark County Department of Community Services. We've just been working really hard on the needs assessment, and I've been working a lot on some other funding stuff, getting ready to do requests for applications for some other federal funding stuff that's been going on in my world.
Peggy, do you mind if we pick on you since you just walked in? We're kind of saying our name and what we do and kind of what's going on in our world a little bit.
Great. So I work for the City of Vancouver. I'm Peggy Sheehan. Been working for the City of Vancouver for about 12 years, and I manage community development and housing programs.
Mavis Nichols. There's so many things going on, I don't know where to start. Let's see. Trying to help us run a bond in November. So if you talk to anyone in the Battleground District, say, vote for the bond, we need it. I'm really excited about what Lydia is able to accomplish with her new position in our district. We are all thrilled. And I'm going to go to the Daybreak Youth groundbreaking. And I could have the date here, but I can't find it, so I'll find it for you. That's going to be exciting to have that 50-bed unit for youth right out 2 miles from my house and a mile from Casey's from district headquarters. Really excited about that.
Paul Martin, other than my crazy life, nothing. I was put for you. I'm taking breakfast white center turn 21 this morning. Before I go to work.
And I'm Kay Budd. I also work for Clark County Department of Community Services. And I think that the biggest thing that's coming up on my plate is Medicaid waiver training that's happening in Leavenworth next week. Just an opportunity to understand more about the opportunities the programs that we work with might have regarding billing Medicaid and what different paths they might be able to move toward finding alternative funding sources to support people who are without homes in our community.
My name's Shree, and I'm just glad to be here. I'm tired. So I worked last night, and by the time I go to bed, it's like, and then these early mornings are just like, so that's kind of my world right now.
I'm Janet. I work for Department of Community Services. I'm the OA.
So we're going around just saying our name and who we're with and kind of a little bit about what might be going on in your world right now.
Well, I'm Sharon Pessett. I'm from Partners in Careers, and I'm going to be giving you a little presentation in a minute that will bring you up to date, but we're working really hard to get people back to work, and it's a fun place to be. So thank you for having me.
Okay. I'm Judith Falstaff, a fairly new appointed person to CAB.
Julie?
I'm Julie Rotz. I'm with the Canvas School Board, and
Thank you, everybody. I think it helps a little bit for us to all know a little bit about what's going on in everyone else's world. I handed out some North County resource guides, which are hot off the press. If anyone wants to take one of those, you're more than welcome to it. And I was asked to talk a little bit. Oh, we need to approve the July minutes.
I move to approve the July minutes. Yes.
Any second?
Second.
So the July minutes have been approved. We have to call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So sorry, you guys. All opposed. So the July minutes have been approved. Oh, I love parliamentary procedure. So now I've been asked to talk a little bit about the Homeless Student Support Program. And as many of you may have heard, we got a grant in Clark County. So Vancouver, Evergreen, and Battleground School Districts partnered with Council for the Homeless to apply for $500,000 grant, which was the limit of that grant. Provides staff that can come and work in our districts as housing navigators. So for some of our families, they will be able to work directly with that family, and then more importantly, there's actual real dollars attached in that grant that will help pay some of the actual real expenses that would help families to not be homeless. And so we're really, really, really excited to get that up and running. Vancouver and Evergreen both have a full-time staff person that is an employee of Council for the Homeless, but will be working in their districts. We have a half-time staff person because our student numbers are lower than theirs. For homeless students, and that person has already been hired, and we have a meeting coming up in a couple weeks that's going to really kick things off and get things going. It's a very short-term, 9-month pilot program, and so we'll see how it goes, but we're all really excited to get that going. Any questions from anyone about that? So this is the funding that was just approved by our legislature in Washington State last year, so we're really excited. All right, so we will
get... Can I plug in?
Yeah.
I see a couple minutes. One of the most exciting things about this particular grant is that it really is focusing on diverting people from having to go into the homeless system itself. And so there's an opportunity to really quickly identify people that are underserved in housing, whether they're doubled up, so they're looking at the McKinney-Vento definition, doubled up, or they're literally homeless, and then to be able to provide them rent assistance without having to go through the Housing Solutions Center. And so it's a benefit to the system because it means that there's fewer people having to go through it, and of course a benefit to the school district because it means that students in need are able to get their needs met much more quickly and efficiently and in their community that they're already used to being a part of. So it's a really exciting opportunity.
And we're really fortunate to have it. The entire program was only $1 million project at the state level, and our little county was able to get half of those dollars. So we're really, really fortunate to be able to be a part of that. Any other comments about that? Are we ready to talk about PIC early sharing?
Sure, I'm glad. I apologize for being a few minutes late.
Oh,
I appreciate the parking was great this morning. I wasn't anticipating that. It was too. Thank you so much again for having us. We're very excited about the grant for Career Academy. You know, we had these pretty lofty goals, and we're working hard to get there. We got a late start, but as of yesterday, we worked with 95 different community members. And we do anticipate hitting our goal by year end. It just means now that the schools are in session, we're going to be doing an awful lot of work. By the time we got started, many of the schools weren't able to get workshops in their family community resource centers. So we'll be hitting those hard. Hopefully they've been in touch with you,
Lydia,
to get those set up. So it's been exciting to watch the program grow. And I've got a few things that I want to share with you. And then hopefully you have some questions for us. So one of the biggest challenges that our families are facing, well, there's two. One, you know, is housing. That affordable housing is huge. And we have limited access to that, but we do connect into resources. But the part that this grant has really been able to help with has been transportation. The bus passes that we're able to provide from the funding have been more impactful than I think we imagined. A lot of people were limited to what they could do because they really didn't have those funds to get a bus pass or to be able to have transportation. And it seems kind of small, but that is what we keep hearing from people is, you know, I wasn't able to get a job beyond my area, and there really weren't that many, but the bus pass allowed me to get my child to daycare and then be able to get to where I needed to go. So that's been a huge win. Another big challenge are the criminal backgrounds. We are seeing a lot of people who are looking for employment that are struggling with criminal backgrounds. And obviously that's not something that the bus pass will fix. We do work with them to help them tell their story and so the employers understand how that making those mistakes has actually helped them become a person that's going to make the right choices in the future. But many have requirements within their HR structure that won't even allow them to be considered. So we are really working hard to help them understand their situation, tell that story to those employers that are willing to give them a second chance. But we're also spending a great deal of time developing relationships with employers that will give them that second chance. And we've developed a few. Ace Hardware on Minnehaha has been a huge partner of ours for all our programs. They've hired 3 different participants from a variety of programs that they've worked out. And in Mike Philbin, who's the owner's opinion is, look, I don't know anybody coming in, and if you at least tell us that you've worked with them, and Kate knows Mike. And Mike's a pretty hard nut to crack. I mean, when I first met Mike, it's like, oh boy, here's one of these guys who's like, you know what, they need to just pull themselves up. But Mike still maintains that philosophy, but he's willing to help grab a hold of that strap and help them pull it up. And he's been tremendous. And we're finding more and more partners awesome. Like that. So that's what we're going to be spending and investing some energy across our whole system. Partners in Careers works with every client the same way, and the Career Academy clients simply aren't referred to our program, but we offer the same resources and the same opportunities to them, and we work on behalf of everyone who's challenged to get employment to how do we help them do that. So those have been, the staff has said, that's the biggest thing that they're struggling with. We are seeing some people of bilingual nature coming in, and that seems to be working well. We occasionally will bring an interpreter in to help. It's mainly the Spanish-speaking families that we've seen. The child care aspect has been huge. The food, of course, they really do appreciate the opportunity to have a meal. So those elements of the program are working really well. The one thing that was kind of surprising is the clients, when the 4-week sessions are over, they like that one-on-one continued connection. You know, we kind of thought our concern with the retention piece was how do we get them to stay connected, because there's nothing holding them. They're not receiving any benefits. They're everything that we could give them from a financial or a support system is pretty much ended. But they like that fact that we're calling and checking on them. They like the fact that we're continuing to support them. And that was really good for us to hear, because we really were afraid they were just going to
disappear.
Resume building has been a huge piece. Again, if you haven't gotten a job in the last 3 years, the process is very, very different these days. And your resume and your cover letters matter. Many companies either want them online, and then they electronically scan them for keywords. So it's not like you can have a resume that fits all jobs. You really do have to tailor it. Same thing with the cover letter. And if you don't have so many of the keywords in your documents, you're screened out. So it's even more difficult.
We need that.
And so, and they look for gaps in employment. So there's all kinds of things. So that part has been a huge piece because of the way the job search has changed. And so it really is. There's kind of a science to it again. You know, it's not just being able to say, this is what I've done. You've got to be able, as you would, help share how this person who has had maybe lower level jobs, how we can advance their skills. And the biggest success we've had is co-enrolling them in other programs. So we work closely with WorkSource on this, and actually WorkSource has agreed to have some orientations, at least one a month, at our facility. So we've made the connection with them. We know that anytime we can bring a service to our participants, it strengthens their resolve to get there and participate. And so we're working with WorkSource to have those really warm handoffs that we indicated we would. So co-enrolling them in programs like our own Youth Build program, which is our 16 to 24-year-old construction focus, but also there's a lot of WIOA training dollars that need to be accessed, and we're able to connect them to some of that. So not only are we helping them get a job at the level they're at, we're really connecting many of them to additional training to build those skill sets. So that's been some of the things that have really been beneficial. I think,
Sharon, can I stop you for a second? Can you just give us a high level idea of what Career Academy
is? Okay.
Yeah.
Sure, absolutely. Sorry. Career Academy is a 4-week program, or a 4-workshop program. In some cases, we do 2 a week. So there's 4 workshops. We work on goal setting and kind of career exploration. We work on the resume and the job applications, so actually the technical parts of the job search, getting them hooked up to job search engines so they know where to look and it's not just Craigslist, and how to identify a bona fide job offer versus a you know, a scam opportunity. We talk a lot about barriers. So this is different based on the population. And so whatever their needs are. So if they need to get connected to housing, we connect them to housing. If they need to get connected to other services like DSHS, we make those connections as well. And then the final one is mock interviewing and just really how do you tell your story. And so it is the steps that we run all our participants through, but in a four-week format or a four-session format. We connect with our partners, so our partners are doing the referrals and the recruitment. So it would be the Family Community Resource Centers, it's Second Step Housing, it's SHARE, it's all the agencies that are out there, and many of them do employment themselves, but this is kind of a really quick, intense workshops. And they meet for 2 hours. During that time, we offer childcare if they need to bring their children. We are able to give them bus passes. We provide food so that we, you know, help sustain them and keep them focused. And then the biggest thing is we just connect them. So in those 4 weeks, we try to meet whatever their job search needs are.
Sharon, I just wanted to add that at least when I've worked with LaDonna for the families that we work with, one thing that's really helped us a lot too is that she's able to come out and meet people where they're at. And that has made huge difference, especially for families that don't have access to transportation. Even the limited busing out where we are, I worked with a family yesterday who dad was riding his bike all over Battleground, and that's what it was. And LaDonna is able to come out and actually meet with him and meet him where he's at. And that really is key as far as I
thank you for sharing that. Yeah, this is pick on the go. This is pick out in the community, and that was the whole plan. And I do know she's met with individual families at coffee shops or you know, whatever it needs to be. Anybody who comes through our doors, we plug them in. And it is focused on low income. We don't turn anybody away, but we're counting the numbers that meet the criteria for the low income, those living in poverty. So we also do community service. Every workshop, every group, every cohort does a community service project. So whether that's connecting them to something that's already going on, or whether that's bringing something in, they make hygiene bags that we then share, or they're making dog toys for the Humane Society. So we try to, the two things that we found through Partners in Careers that for most of our participants, at least our adults, lack of education. And so we also have GED prep right on site, or we connect them back to high school if they're high school age students and are eligible, or connection to community. So we felt that part of this project was how do we get them to understand that there's a bigger world? Because once they understand that there's a community that will support them, it kind of shifts their mindset in all of our programs. And so every group does a community service project. And as I said, we do one in the class so that it's easy for them to participate, but then they learn about different agencies. And LaDonna is really good about saying, what do you want to do? You guys want to go somewhere? Do you want to do something? Do you want to meet at this? And we have the list of community service projects that are already happening so we can plug in. But then we also have those ones we can do wherever they're at. We try to give back to the agency that's referring. So if we're a Family Community Resource Center, there's something they can do, we ask them, is there something we can do? And then the group gets behind that. But if not, we have a multitude of other options that we've kind of developed. So that's kind of where the program is. I'm looking to see. The one thing that we have found, and this is true of all of our programs, but Rebecca sent me this article on the multi-generational or the two generations. It really works. We invite the entire family. And what we found is there have been so many benefits to that. One, there's just an understanding of the parent and the child about what the other group is going through. And sometimes that eliminates some sabotaging, because there are some families that, if they haven't worked, they're not always sure how to support the student. So they say, well, you can't go to work because I need to babysit your younger brother or sister. And those kind of sabotage, or we're going on a family vacation, sorry you have to work, you just can't go to work. And so there's this unintentional kind of sabotage that's going on. They're being forced to make choices that do impact their employment. So when both sides, both parents and children, are going through this process, that fear, that unknown, that uncertainty is reduced because they're kind of experiencing it together. They also learn how to support each other, whether that's emotionally, like, hey, mom, great job, or technically, here, I'll help you fill out that application, because sometimes more and more is going online, and many of our families we're working with don't have that comfort of working with computers and those systems, because they're not as intuitive. You know, when you go, if you, for fun, you should try to go fill out an online application. It's not quite. Some systems are really good, but there's some that aren't quite as intuitive. So they're there to be, help each other do that. They hold each other accountable. You know, hey, have you done this? Have you done that? We've got class with LaDonna tomorrow night. Do you have your, you know, draft resume or this or that ready? And it's cute. There's some competition. We don't play that up. We try to play that down. But sometimes it's like, it's pretty cool. I mean, you hear of a child getting a job or a parent getting a job, and they're kind of jostling with each other. It reduces the stress because, again, if you have a single parent trying to provide for a family, we all know very few families can survive on one income, especially if you're talking a minimum wage job. So then the stress is reduced because there's this collective effort now to support the family, and there's shared resources, both financially and just the connections that they each learn through their job search. Hey, I was looking for this job. This might work for you, kind of stuff going on. And then there's this shared pride. We had a mom and a daughter go through the program together, and watching them talk about each other and their accomplishments. You know, I have three daughters, and I'm very proud of them, but to watch these two, they both completed their GEDs, and they both got employment, and just to watch them share that, it's one of those things that have led both of them. It's just was a springboard for both of them. And then there's this opportunity to do something as a family. So I think this article is spot on, this information. That's what we're seeing anyway, is that when it can be shared, there is just a much greater chance of success. So, and we've had them. They shared a couple of success stories, and it really was about reducing a barrier. For both of these gentlemen, it was the transportation piece. You know, and once that was reduced, they got their jobs and they've sustained them. So it's kind of what's going on. We're going to continue to beat the bushes. So,
Sharon, what's the criteria, the income criteria for folks to get help?
Rebecca might have to help me with that. 125%?
A federal poverty level.
Yeah.
So what is that for a family of four?
That I don't know. I could send it to you.
No, that's okay.
It's like $17,000 for a single person.
Well, I'm glad to know you
it
guys
changes
know.
Every year.
Yeah.
We have to always go online.
And we're always looking at the.
Yeah, it's online.
Between the area median income and the federal poverty level, it's hard to remember which one is which.
And they change.
So it's yeah, minimum wage at best.
Yeah, it's fine.
And most of them are not employed. Some have part time jobs.
I think there's another part of Partners in Careers that you didn't talk about. I was there this summer when some teachers were presenting this.
Yes.
So I just want to say, if you don't know what they do, these teachers have a 40-hour internship with a company in their field. And I had to leave for part of it, but I did get to hear a couple of them speak. What they're doing, one of them was working on an electric skateboard type thing that was just fabulous, and the other one was a career web design type thing. What that does for kids, these teachers were so excited and so pumped, they're taking that back to the classrooms, and when it goes back to the classrooms, and they can impact kids and get them excited about some new career or how they could get into a career. That's powerful. So I don't know just how that worked, but I was really, really pleased to be able to hear. I didn't know anything about it until I got invited to come and listen.
Well, I'm glad you were there. It's part of there's a grant that we've gotten from the Workforce Southwest Washington. It's called Youth Works, and the intention is for businesses to be connected to students in Clark, Cowlitz, and Wakayakum County. And through that, it's an externship. So these teachers were selected to spend 40 hours in a field they were interested in over the summer to do exactly that, take that back to their students. And what came out of that was not only the teachers getting excited and re-energized about their roles in the schools, but connections to community. So almost everyone who had an externship, the business they worked with said, we would love to come in and talk to your students, or we would love for your students to come do a workshop. And those of you that work in the school system know that teachers don't always have the time to develop those. And actually that's what Partners in Careers does and is going to continue to do for the districts. Is provide internships and make those connections, but the teachers were so excited to be able to have that. And the businesses, as we've said, were very excited to get involved, and that's what we're finding, that once the businesses understand the role they can play, whether it is giving an employee a chance, knowing that there's staff back here to support them. I mean, we've been through employee counseling with some of our former participants. We've been through employee terminations, and we're there to support the employee and the employer. But this other piece about getting mentorships and getting guest speakers and stuff, it's just huge, because when the businesses understand how they can be involved in creating excitement for students, especially in their career field, it's powerful. And so we are fortunate that businesses respond as well. So thank you for being there and saying that. It was a powerful program.
It was powerful.
We'll continue to do more.
So one of my pet peeves is we talk about college and career readiness for school, and so much of that becomes college focused. This is career focused, and that's what so many of our kids need, is the career focus beyond, not how long we're going to go to college, not how long we should. So when we can get anything like that that says, here's some careers you might consider, I mean, it's wonderful.
And we start with that. We look at their interests and we help them determine their skill sets, and then we determine what's the path. Is it college? And for some of them, we try to encourage them all to say, you know, you could if you wanted to, and these are the steps you're going to have to take. For some of them, it's a little longer than others, but there may be a technical school, or there may be just right, you know, high school to work, and so we do talk about that with our students. And we've realized, we did an impact study through the Community Foundation, who funded this project called this program called Project Impact, and we realized that we use mentors and site visits for our kids. We should be doing that with our adults, too, and that was just one of those, oh, gee, whiz. Why didn't we think of that? But that's what our participants said, and they said it wasn't about the technical pieces. Yes, the resume building and the job search and all that helped them, and their working with us gave them confidence. But the part that we didn't expect was this next step, which was it also changed how they saw themselves, and their self-identity was changed, and what they thought for the future was changed. And that was surprising to me. And someone said, "Why were you surprised?" Because I didn't think that people actually changed how they viewed themselves in the mirror. I knew that they could do these things, and I really attributed that more to confidence, but they attributed to saying, people don't see me as a person of poverty anymore. You know, they would say, I know people look at me and see a person on welfare. It's like, you know, for me, I don't see that. It's like, are you kidding me? You really felt that way. And to be able for them to say, I don't feel that way anymore, that I've flown from welfare to stability, it just astounded me and inspired me, and so.
I wonder, are there, it's not specific to your program, but are there bunches of them, or are there more apprenticeship programs than the formal ones? Or?
We're working on that. Yes, there are. There are more. Clark College is doing a phenomenal job with apprenticeship programs, and I know that WorkSource is also working with local businesses on specific things, like welding. It's a huge in-demand field. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at all the in-demand fields and working hard. Sometimes that moves a little slower. We're working with apprenticeships with construction companies for our youth build program, since that has a construction focus. And whether we're trying to get them all formal and certified, but if they're not, we're still even trying to provide that apprentice-like format, so that apprenticeship-like format, so they're building skills and having experience along the way. Still need far more of those, but we're working on it. There are more. And the people that aren't employed right now, there are really good reasons why they're not employed. Yeah. A lot of it, as you know, deals with mental health, and that's a tougher wall to get over. But so we're trying to. This tool has been helpful because many of the people that are out there attending the Career Academy sessions aren't eligible for other programs. They're kind of in that no man's zone. You know, they're not bad enough to be down here, but yet they're not quite here. And so we're hopeful that we're going to be able to connect them to things that will raise that bar. So.
Wow, Sharon. You know, I would also love to add, too, that we did a pilot program with Partners in Careers in our district back in the day with Dave Cole a few years ago. And it was absolute magic, because what he was able to do, well, first of all, he had 100% attendance with some kids with pretty high risk factors and lots of barriers, 100% attendance. Amazing. And it really, really inspired these kids and gave them the hope and the motivation that they needed to really go into the field. And so what they were able to do in that particular program, the best example that Dave told me is that a kid was able to go out and work in a field that he had some interest in. And the example he used was working on wind turbines, or the big things up the gorge. And so, you know, what high school kid would be qualified to go and work on those, right? But your program was able to partner that particular student with that company, and he was able to go in and do an apprenticeship program with them. And it really it really works, and it really gives these kids hope. So I'm just grateful. Yeah. And it sounds like you guys are just rocking forward with lots of other good stuff.
And you know, that student who this came to, so they worked with Vesta Hospital or Vesta International, and then actually had a scholarship at the school with Arch Miller down in the, I don't know what they call it, but where they work with the wind energy. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to because there were some family issues, and so he kind of fell back, and he wasn't able to take, there's this opportunity laid with a job laid at his feet, and he wasn't able to do it, but he's back engaged in the program, and he credits that experience of giving him hope that once he kind of got through his mom's medical issues and his depression and other things, he's now back re-engaged. So this is 5-year span.
Yeah.
And he came back and he said he knew he'd be welcomed back and he was excited to figure out, and he's gone a different direction, but it was all because of that.
Yeah.
And I call it the magic. When they understand that somebody cares about them outside of anybody you should, it's magic.
Yeah, it is pure magic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for everything that you do. It's really
I hear one word coming through that, hope.
Yeah. Hope is huge. Hope is huge. It really is. It's the only way it'll be sustainable for them. You know, we can help them get a job, but getting a job isn't the difficult part. It's keeping a job.
Yep.
And that keeping a job, we actually have a workshop on that because it's not as easy as it would sound. So.
Peggy, to go back to your question about the federal poverty level, for a family of four, it's just over $30,000 at 125%.
So Sharon, what does the future hold for your program? Any tweaks that you're going to be making? Any additions that you'd like to add?
For Career Academy?
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to continue to work on the background piece. That's going to be huge for us. I think we found that the retention piece is going to be a little bit more time-consuming than we thought, so we're really working hard, and we actually have already tweaked that, is to how to start those connections right out of the gate. So instead of waiting until they're done to make those weekly phone calls are happening the first week, so that they get in this pattern, they're going to hear from us. That was a change that we didn't anticipate in the beginning, but it works, and as I said, they're still excited, so they welcome those phone calls, and so when they continue, it just seems like part of it. Obviously getting out and getting those scheduled early as we can and continuing that process. We're also looking for more partners that are outside the scope that we have listed. We found that there are probably going to be some businesses that are going to want to get involved. More housing, apartment complexes. We're hoping to reach out to them as well. So people that aren't even connected, because you still have to be connected to an agency right now if we're working with our family community resource centers and our other social service agencies. We want to go beyond that and look at just places where people gather. So maybe even going to the mall and going to just housing complexes and offer those services where they don't already have a connection to someone who's providing them services. So those are probably the biggest ones. We're going to continue to do, as Lydia said, meet them wherever they are. So, you know, if someone wants us to meet one-on-one, we will do that in a public place. I think that's been a huge piece. But to also really, the part that we probably can build more is that youth leadership piece. That part has been slower coming than we anticipated. So that's going to require probably another strategy on how we find those youth and engage them. Because the idea was bring them all in at the same time and offer the youth one workshop, because the language is a little different, but it's the same process, and have the adults and then bring them together at some point. So those are probably the key things, the learnings that we had. We know we got a slow start, so but we do know that our calendar is full from now until December, and we're pretty confident we'll make the numbers. So. But we also welcome, if you guys know any agencies that you think or any organizations or gathering places that this program should be held, we welcome those, because we will throw all of our staff capacity. Partners in Careers doesn't work in silos anymore. Everybody works on everything, and if we need to do 3 workshops at the same time in 3 different locations, we pull 3 staff because everybody approaches the process the same way.
How many workshops do you have scheduled? You said you're booked to the end of the year.
I think she has 36 more workshops scheduled. We hope to get about 8 to 10 people per workshop. So,
How big is your staff?
We have 16 staff. We're hiring for 3 more positions due to program growth. So,
excellent.
If you know of anybody who is looking for a place that that changes every single day. But makes you go home feeling that you've accomplished something, we would love to have them 2 employment specialists and a administrative assistant, because I can no longer keep up. So, Well, it's the community, and there's amazing staff. And if you ever want to stop by, we welcome you to come out, because there's always something going on. The kids are working on their GEDs, or the adults are there in a workshop. We welcome you to just stop by. I tell you, you will leave with a smile on your face, having met someone who is positively impacted by the work that you've allowed us to do through this grant. So.
Excellent. All right. So let's move on to some of our task force updates. Sheree, do you want to talk a little bit about anything that might be going on with advocacy?
Well, last month we were not able to meet. So I think we were all busy with our lives. So we are having our meeting this Friday at Burgerville. So to continue on with getting that all put together and what advocacy looks like.
Excellent. And Bridget, do you want to update us a little bit on the community needs assessment?
Yes. Actually, Rebecca's been doing all the work because we've been waiting for the community assessment go through. So I think you had some resources to help you in the analysis of that, right? So we're going to have a meeting coming up.
Yes. I'm not sure when it is, right? My calendar doesn't link really very well to my work email anymore. But we will be having a meeting coming up soon. The last meeting was brief, just a discussion on the changes that were made with the survey and what was released. We've received a little over 200 online responses, and we've received about 450 that have been entered into our database, paper copies. And there's several that have little tweaks that we need to take a look at and see if we can use the data that was provided on there. So we anticipate having more than the 800 responses that we had in the last one. So it's going great, and the data will be really well used in our next assessment as we finish putting the data together.
Any kind of sneak peek of anything glaring at this point?
No, I've been avoiding looking at the data itself because, you know, it's graphical. Once you start looking, you don't stop. So the only thing I've been really monitoring is how many we've received. We will be able to tell once we have all the information. Jennifer did a fantastic job. She's been pretty much by herself entering all of the surveys into our online that we've been receiving. And so she probably has a better knowledge of what's been going in at this point. We also are working with a consultant with Applied Research Northwest. We got a partial grant from Washington State Community Action Partnership to help pay for her to come in. And she's kind of looking at our survey to see what we were doing is what we should have been doing. And then gonna help.
Well, she's been very happy. Sorry to interrupt. She was actually very impressed with
And then she'll help us look at the data itself and kind of help us move forward into doing the focus groups for additional qualitative data for the needs assessment.
So the deadline to get is gone? I mean, we're beyond the deadline?
No.
You are still
September 30th.
September 30th.
And we anticipate getting the hard copies in the mail for at least 2 weeks after that, when the agencies that have just been collecting them will contact us, and we'll all of a sudden get a huge stack of them to come in. So,
well, thank you for all your hard work with it too, Jenna. Yes, a lot of data, but hopefully it'll show us some good stuff. I'm excited to see the results.
So am I. Just not going to do it.
Thank you. Kate, do you want to talk a little bit about any legislative updates at the state level?
Sure. So at the state level, as we all know, we're kind of in a down session right now. Politicians have been local and holding numerous meetings. It seems like affordable housing as well as homelessness, particularly around youth homelessness, have been key topics. And there's been a number of meetings that have been going on. And so that's exciting. I think that, you know, politicians are interested and are looking to see how they can help support the crises that are happening throughout the entire state around affordable housing and homelessness. The state's legislative session begins January 9th. It's a long session, so it's 105 days. It'll go through the end of April. Knowing
the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance, probably most intimately. I know that that statewide focused agency, as well as many others, are in the process of finalizing their legislative agenda for this session. And so I anticipate that come October, November, they'll all be releasing their legislative agendas, which really are the focus that they have throughout the entire legislative session. And so as we see those, we'll be sure to get those out. The Washington Low Income Housing Alliance, they're very poised right now to both try to push some legislative changes through proactively. One key legislative change that they are going to be pushing is around the document recording fees, which is the primary funding source for the homeless programs in local communities throughout Washington State. Right now, there's a sunset in 2019 on the majority of those document recording fees. And so the Alliance is looking to get rid of that sunset. And even potentially, there's just been talk right now looking at increasing those document recording fees. They're not quite sure what type of traction they're going to have. I haven't heard whether they're actually going to move forward with that. But it does seem like at this point, as I hear through the grapevine, the idea of at least moving the sunset out further for the document recording fees has been relatively well accepted among both parties at the state level. As you know, there's an election coming up in November, and so that could completely change everything. But right now, they're optimistic that at least they can keep the bulk of the document recording fees around for a longer period of time beyond 2019. Another main focus that they have is around increasing the housing trust fund. Of course, it's very difficult to build additional affordable housing without that state-level housing trust fund. And so there's going to be a push on increasing the amount of money available there. That seems like a focus that's been on the legislature for a number of years now, is making sure that there's a robust amount of money in that fund, as well as increasing renter rights. That's also something that the Alliance has been focusing on for quite a while. Washington State is kind of generally known in the Northwest as having some very strong landlord rights, and sometimes that puts tenants at a disadvantage, and so the Alliance is working to try to increase the number of tenants' rights throughout the state. What they're going to come up with for kind of a bill or advocacy, I'm not quite sure, and I'm certainly going to let you know when I know. The Alliance is also on the defense. They recognize that there might be some efforts among legislators to increase the administrative requirements around the Housing and Homelessness Program, which certainly is never a bad thing. The challenge there is that it doesn't increase the dollars that are available, and of course, additional admin requires additional staff time. And so the Alliance is just trying to help educate the legislators that you know, with those additional requirements needed additional funds. And that's also why I think the negotiations around document recording fees are going relatively well, is because the additional administrative requirements are something that some leaders in the legislature are very interested in seeing, particularly around performance measures. HUD has very clear performance measures for all homeless systems, and the state has very slowly begun adopting those. And so as we continue to see homelessness rise, the state in particular is very much looking to hold systems feet to the fire and have them progress toward those performance measures. So we'll be seeing more about that as well. Any questions?
Wow.
It'll be busy. It'll be a busy season. There'll be much going on, and I think many opportunities for advocacy, no matter where your passion lies.
Can you define the document recording fees? What does that include?
Sure. So it includes three different bills, and what we locally call 2163, 1359, and 2060. And collectively, it's in total, the 1359, 2163, that's $48. And then the 2060 is an additional 10?
10
or 12?
Yeah.
Yes. 10.
But they're from real estate transaction recordings. So every real estate transaction document that's recorded, 50 some dollars goes to the state About 60% of that comes back, you know, comes back to the county, you know, for local use with some pretty good flexibility, and about 40% of that goes to the state and comes back to the county in the form of consolidated homeless grant funds.
So the ordinance that's up before council today to change the fee structure, which are mostly reductions, would include some of those?
No, okay.
That's all local property tax that they're talking about today. The fee recordings? Or fees that are all local.
Okay.
Yeah, so
yeah.
The document recording fees are state level.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good question. And one, I actually have a really good kind of piece by piece document that we can send out regarding the document recording fees and how much.
Okay. Well, it's fine. I just wondered if there was a connection.
So, you know, the only thing I'd add to complement to what, Kate said is, you know, like I said last meeting, you know, the document reporting fees are critical to local funding of homeless continuum care and this homeless services. So, I think, you know, my sense, I think what Kate kind of articulated was, I think the Low Income Housing Alliance has a plan. And I think they're capable and they're competent to execute it, to do their best to get that sunset moved out, you know. But, you know, what I will caution us on in terms of you know, it's good, it's important that we be active and engaged in the advocacy piece when this legislation is moving forward, is the reality last time was those document recording fees almost went away about 2 years ago. You know, had significant reductions and almost went away. And it was a real coup and a feather in the Low Income Housing Alliance's hat that they got them sustained the way they did. But the argument 2 years ago, we wanted it to be lift the sunset and make them permanent, and it really turned into, will these fees be collected? Okay, and the best we got was was continue doing what we're doing and move the sunset out. And if you really look at the political pressures and the economic pressures the legislature is going to be dealing with in this next session, they really haven't changed. You know, like there's more awareness of homelessness, which is helpful to the existence of, and continuation of document reporting fees, but in terms of where is the balance, you know, is the balance of power in the House and the Senate, you know, which party is going to have it? What's the issue, how is funding going to happen with the McCleary decision, and how is education going to be funded, and you know, how is that going to impact the other social services that are going on? Those pressures have actually increased. You know, what's the revenue of the state, and what are the forecasts moving forward? So. And how does funding look like at the federal level? You know, so the reason I'm saying is I don't think whatever happens is going to be a very, very hard fought battle, you know, and the consequences of not preserving those document reporting fees would just be disastrous. So
I went recently, I told Rebecca this, to a workshop that she sent us about advocacy, and it they talked, there was a lady from the legislature, and she talked about that if you're going to do anything in terms of advocacy, there were all kinds of different groups there, said it has to be now in the fall, because it is going to be extremely hard for anybody that's not McCleary decision related, mm-hmm. You know, that this legislative session will be totally focused on that and how to fund that, and so if there's anything you have to do, it's now before the legislature starts, because it's going to be very challenging for anything else.
I don't really have anything to report federal-wise. You know, it's really it's really dead out there right now in terms of the federal legislative activity that pertains to CSBG, and you know, we're in that electoral period, so. Yeah, I don't even think NCAF put out an update.
They did.
Would you like me?
David
Bradley is the president of the National Community Action Foundation, and he's really good at predicting what's going to happen. So he tends to keep us kind of updated. But they just released some information that what their feeling is going to happen. So federal legislation is back in session, but it's only going to be 2 weeks. They're predicting they're going to be done and out by September 23rd, so that they can start focusing on the elections. The House is really pushing for a one-year continuing resolution, which carries 2016 funds forward. The Senate is saying, and the Democrat side more is saying, that we want one that goes until either December. The Freedom Caucus is saying, let's do one until March. So there's some discussions going on there, but they have to figure it out before they can adjourn, so that we'll know by next meeting where we are with the continuing resolution as far as funding goes for next year. The Republicans are trying to add on some extra things to some of the funding bills, as they usually do, like defunding Planned Parenthood and things like that. So there's some heated discussions. There's only a couple of major things that they need to get done. One is the continuing resolution. And so there's going to be some heated discussions over the next couple of weeks before they adjourn for the elections. And then David Bradley is actually going to be providing a webinar in November, about a week after the election, and he's going to put together his forecast on what the new elections are going to do and how it's going to affect.
What does that mean?
What does it mean for community action? So that's really the big picture there. So I'm trying to get figured out how to. They're only accepting credit cards to be part of that, and so I'm trying to work with them to say, hey, how can we pay for this without a credit card, because we're a government agency. And so when I do get that figured out and I know more about date and time, I can put an invite out to the CAB and see if any of you are interested. It's a significant amount of time, and so if you're not able to make it, then I definitely will provide some feedback at the January meeting. About what happened, what his predictions will be, but he's really good at what he does. So,
has he given any hints so far about, based on the presidential election, how that might be affecting?
That's what
his
priorities. His priorities continue to be CSBG, Head Start, weatherization, lighting, and as of right now, and with the continuing resolution, that's flat funding. But what he wants to accomplish, what he's been trying to accomplish over the past
20 years.
but his focus of effort the past 18 months has been a new CSBG reauthorization, he felt very close last year, but it's still, we're still talking continuing resolution, so we'll see.
Excellent. All right. Ty wasn't able to be here this morning. Does anyone have anything to add for local legislative? Anything local that anyone wants to share?
Well, know that the levy's on the ballot, and there's been a lot of conversations about that over the past few weeks. The Bring Vancouver Home has been doing some doorbelling. I talked to them, they said that they had visited 5,400 homes, and they doorbelling is very scientific. And
could you talk a little louder?
Over here. So that Bring Vancouver Home is the group that is supporting the Vancouver levy to raise the property tax that'll support housing. And they have visited 5,400 homes, and the doorbelling is all very scientific. So they select homes to go to that are more likely to listen to their message. And they rate those homes on a scale 1 to 5. 5 being that they're going to get their information torn up and pushed out the door, and then 1 being that the people are going to give them money to support the campaign. And he said that 48% of the homes that they visited, so 48% of the 5,400 homes, have been in the scale of 2 to 3. So that's very positive.
We've been getting at the city, we've been getting lots of questions about the specifics of how the funds could be spent, which is really a good, that's a good indication that people at least are interested. So we're that'll be a, there's a how many weeks till the election? About
nine weeks.
So that'll be a pretty intense.
You don't want to hear more about pneumonia?
Oh, I just want it to be over.
Yeah, it'll be over soon enough, one way or the other. So they, and then the city of Vancouver right now is in the budgeting process, so our budget will be released in the 1st of October. And the budget we're looking at how, if we can continue to support the Day Center for Homeless Folks, right now over by Friends of the Carpenter, and we're doing some work around that. We're working with the county on potentially use of 2060 funds or other funds to support their operations. So that's kind of all I have related to the budget that would affect some of these programs.
Great. Thanks, Peg. Anyone else? I guess I'll just mention that if you're interested in doing anything around that levy, Bring Vancouver Home has a website, and so you can check that out and see what they're up to.
Excellent. Anyone else? Okay, Rebecca, let's move on to the outcomes report.
Yay! So we are reporting the second quarter outcomes for all of our community-funded programs, our Consolidated Homeless Grant, and our Emergency Solution Grant, so that's what you have in front of you. I peruse through here and I don't see anything that's alarming at this point. Next quarter, if we have some pretty low numbers, then we'll definitely start making those phone calls and talking to programs. Partners and Careers, this was a pilot project, and we all know pilot projects take a while to get going, but they are obviously up and running and they're going full swing. So I'm not concerned about their numbers as far as the numbers served and the percent spent today. We talked last time about making a change and making sure that I spelled out the funding sources for each of those tables. So I did make sure I changed that on there. And then there's one more thing that you'll notice is different. You'll see those little stars next to the agency names. And so as I keep working my way through the organizational standards and the requests and requirements that they have, one of the things is to make sure that the board is aware that the agents that we have conducted risk assessments on all of our agencies, that county has a requirement that we do a risk assessment for each agency we contract with every 3 years. And so what that star next to the agency means is that we have already completed a risk assessment within the last 3 years. So they are up to date on the risk assessments. I can tell you we have several scheduled for the next 6 weeks, and so I have no doubt that the remaining agencies will be done before the end of this year. The risk assessment really takes a look at the agency as a whole. So we look at their complete fiscal responsibility, we look at their board, we look at their board minutes and make sure that their board is getting updates on the programs. We dive into their security as far as their document retention and, you know, how are they securing their files and things like that. So we take a wide gamut and look through the whole entire agency and assess their risk. It's very odd to see any agency that we contract with have any serious issues that we need to work with them on. A risk assessment, if they did have a higher score, so they want to be as close to zero on the point scale. Ones with a higher score will trigger an on-site monitoring that will go out and actually work with them. More program specific for this on-site monitoring. We do our administrative review for every request for application, and Sharon's aware there's a million documents we ask for that we don't bring to the board. There's no reason for you guys to look at those millions of documents. So we already know that we're working with a solid agency before we even go into an application situation with them. So I just want to give you that update so now you can see what that star means, and then we'll see those stars pop up even more as we move forward. Did you see anything, Kate, that you thought might warrant a discussion?
Impact Northwest, the Rockbury Housing Program, on the first page, kind of halfway down. Just being that they have so little money, and that was just based off of what was available through the last RFA. They just have strategically waited to serve their two people. So that's why it's at 7%.
It's strategic. There is one at zero, but they have $5,000.
That's the, that is actually kind of
emergency funds.
Exactly. Correct. So only if a household is being evicted due to code violations, then that those funds will come in. So we rarely see those used. I think I've seen 4 households over the last 6 years. So it's just that emergency set of funds. Any other questions about the report?
Just curious. The perch, this is way down on its numbers of youth community resources, although they're up other places. Do you ever get a sense of where those things are?
With that one, we've really been pushing on trying to report on just one individual as opposed to, instead of like encounters. And so I think that's been a little challenging for them because instead of just, you know, one encounter, they've been, you know, reporting on the number of people that they've been serving. So what that says to me is that they've been seeing the same people often.
Yeah.
So they're changing a little bit the way they're reporting the data.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good thing, though.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. And even with our outreach program, we've been really pushing that it's not about the number of people that you touch or say the number of band-aids that you give out.
Yep.
It's really about focusing on housing with these folks. And if that means that you see Fred, you know, 20 times in a week, that's what we want you to do, as opposed to touching 100 people in a week. And so it does mean that they're serving fewer people, but it means that the impact of their assistance is stronger, and that they're really working toward trying to reduce the housing barriers that people have, and really just focusing on engagement and having those strong relationships, so that, you know, simply they can have a conversation with someone if things aren't going well, or if at some point they decide they want to do something different and they want to access, you know, say, substance use treatment or what have you, then they have that strong relationship with the outreach team to be able to help them access that resource.
You know, go ahead.
The hard thing is, if you're reporting those numbers, you may be locked into having put in a large number at the beginning because you're going to touch everybody, and often there's not a way to track how many contacts you've had. You're absolutely right, it makes sense. But often if you're the person who's trying to fill in the reports, it's almost impossible to convey that sense that this program is better because we're seeing this person 10 times rather than seeing 10 people once.
So good point. And one of the reasons that we have really been focusing on outcomes as well, and that it, you know, it's moving away from just those encounters and looking at, you know, how many barriers have you reduced for the people that you're working with. And so you know, because of that, it may mean that they're working with people more often, but then they've actually achieved a reduction in barriers, which is, of course, the overall goal of the outreach program.
And just to make that really real for everyone, this is really a big part of what I do every day. And so kind of the difference would be like, okay, I hand someone a resource guide and say, here you go ahead and call whoever you want to in here. And this is a great tool, don't get me wrong. But compare that to, okay, what's the situation that you're, what's your need right now? Let's go ahead and call that person right now while you're in my office, and I'm gonna get you connected. And so I'm alleviating the confidentiality barrier because I have a parent right there who's able to talk directly with that service, and we'll go ahead and set up that appointment with LaDonna so that I can get them directly in, and they instantly feel that connection. And so it really does make a difference in just giving them the basics and say, here you go, versus making that connection and making it real. So it really does make sense to report that data differently. I just wanted to add that.
And it's why everything costs so much more than it used to. Yeah. Because you're actually trying to
do it. It takes time to get it done. Anyone else want to add anything? Rebecca, do you want to talk a little bit about our January meeting coming?
Yes, so it is time to start planning the January meeting. So the last few years we've had at what we've called a retreat. We now call it a meeting so we can actually do business. And we've done a five-hour meeting in the past. So I wanted to start talking with the group to see if there's anything that you guys want us to focus on. What information you want us to present to you and provide to you to fill in the time that we have. Speaking with the executive team, they had mentioned that Kate had provided a while ago a CAB 101. And when Kate and I got together and spoke about it, it really actually is our new orientation that we've been providing to the newer members. That is something that we can do again and provide to you and actually go a little bit more in depth when we do our orientation, and Judith and Julie and Bridget will remember this, that, you know, it's packing a whole lot of information in right about an hour. And so one of the suggestions we had was that we could do a little bit more in depth on a CAB 101 or orientation type information. The other request was doing a 1,000-foot discussion about housing here in Clark County and bringing in the experts to talk to us about what's going on in around housing. Where is the funding coming from? Where is it going? What's the future? We have that crystal ball out. And so those are a couple of the discussions that we thought we might bring to you. One question I did have, or actually I have two questions. So the first question was, what does the board do? The housing discussion we feel is going to be quite large of a discussion. We have a couple of hours of business to take care of, and then a housing discussion. And then if we throw in the orientation, that's really going to be too much for a five-hour day. So we could keep it to the business and the housing discussion and keep that five-hour day. Or we could expand it to a full day and say like 9 to 4 and really have that orientation piece included in it. But I wanted to get your feedback before we move forward with that to see what you felt about doing a 9 to 4 rather than an 8 to 1.
As long as there's food.
There's food. I promise.
I'm with you.
We always have coffee and food will definitely be there. That is not a problem. We will make sure that lunch is